Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Captain Jean-Luc Picard of the USS.
Commander Benjamin Sisko, Federation Starbase, Deep Space Nine.
Welcome to the greatest generation, Deep Space Nine, the Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison.
We're here. We're podcasting. Get used to it.
I don't know if we can appropriate that safely.
I think people will tell us if we can't.
Yeah. Whether or not it's actually true.
Yeah, Ben. Wow.
Adam, we have hit some pretty impressive download numbers lately. Consistently higher numbers than we ever have before. I don't know if I want to be too specific about it,
Where are you beginning the measurement?
From the center of the anus.
Right. All the way up to the very last download, huh?
Yeah, but it's really nice that it seems like we got some new people coming on board to the show, and that's really cool.
You want to feel like you're growing.
Yeah. It doesn't feel good to look at stagnant or falling download numbers.
I've always thought we wanted the show's success to resemble the hockey stick graph of global warming. As the Earth's surface increases in temperature, so do our download numbers.
Yeah.
It gives me great comfort.
Does. It's nice. It's nice that that something so cataclysmic can be linked inextricably to our success.
Oh no, are you saying that there's a causal relationship there?
Yeah. Well, I don't know.
We need to ask people to stop downloading the show immediately.
I don't know if people realize this, but to power our laptops that we use to record the show on, we each go outside and light a barrel of fuel oil on fire.
Yeah,
and the warmth of that is where we derive our energy from.
Very few Star Trek podcasts are fueled by bunker oil, and yet ours are.
Mm-hmm.
We're like a container ship show.
Yeah, we're trying to maximize both carbon emissions and particulate emissions.
Hmm. Getting a bunch of those.
Yeah.
In my basement studio. Lots of emissions these days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that because your diet has changed to accommodate dairy?
Oh, yeah. I'm eating it all now, Ben.
Are you ripping a lot more ass?
Yeah, things are really moving.
Mm-hmm.
Gases, solids, liquids.
Fun.
Fire.
So you've just... I wonder, our buddy Jesse Thorne, the boss of MaximumFun.org... He suffers from migraines, and there's a whole list of foods that he can't eat, like chocolate and raw onions, because they're migraine triggers. But yeah, and even better when they're together. But Jesse gets migraines all the time. I'm wondering if he could just enjoy his, you know.
What if he pivoted into a more chocolate and raw onion based lifestyle?
Oh yeah,
I don't know. Lean into it. Maybe he should make his body an ecosystem where a headache would not want to take form. Go live somewhere else, migraine.
Yeah.
This body's not for you. Poisoned by onions and Hershey Kisses.
But both of you have fairly debilitating deals, and
I don't feel debilitated.
Well, you seem to have just kind of resigned yourself to it recently, I would say.
I mean, one thing that happened to us recently is that we're doing a more Airbnb VRBO type of touring.
Yes.
And this often asks us to share a bathroom situation.
Yes.
It seems to me like a fair amount of confidence by you that we'll be able to hold this thing together as we continue touring.
Yeah. Well, I think that the Uxbridge Shimoda policy that Rob is not allowed to poop while on tour is going to be one of the main things that holds the center.
Yeah. I think one thing I learned from the great John Gabris, also a famous poopman from back in the day, is that even if you're not staying in a hotel, oftentimes you may poop in one.
Yes, that's true.
Hotels, the safe harbor of poopers the world over.
Yeah.
And so even if we're not staying in a hotel throughout much of our touring, I find that if I need to, I'll make them available for that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I'll be fine. Don't worry. Don't worry at all. I'm not worried.
People are very scandalized by bathrooms. And I say just get over it, you know? Go in there, do your thing, get out.
Look at me. I've made it a major part of my identity that even strangers ask me about after shows. So maybe my life can be an example to others.
They're strangers to you, but you're not a stranger to them, Adam.
That's it. We are not on equal footing.
No. It's an asymmetric parasocial relationship. That's what that's called.
People would do right to remember that.
Yeah. Hard to remember, but worth it.
Yeah. Well, it is. It has been easy to forget about one major character on Deep Space Nine, Ben, who comes back in a big-time way on this episode.
Lieutenant Toast.
I'm Lieutenant Commander Michael Eddington, Starfleet Security.
Yeah.
He's really Second Lieutenant Toast.
Yeah, he's Private Toast. And he's great. Let's get into it, Ben. I want to talk about Eddington as we discuss Deep Space Nine Season 5 Episode 13, For the Uniform.
Do you realize how incredible this is? No. Of course you don't.
This is a fun, it's not quite in media race, I guess, though I suppose it is. Like
we're
dropped into a mission that Sisko is on. He's undercover.
Yeah, undercover in the Star Trek caves. There are Fugees sleeping in sleeping bags on the floors. A lot of welding and oil cans with fires in them that kind of look like the oil drums that we use to power this program.
It's clear that the Maquis Raiders are constructed using angle grinders. That's fun.
Yeah. Sisko is here looking for Sing Ta, an informant who's going to tell him about where to find Eddington. And he asks an old man who is doing something sparky.
Looking for a friend of mine.
Where he can find Sing Ta. And the guy indicates at a... very theatrical looking set of curtains that Sisko walks through, only to have a Klingon disruptor stuck in the back of his head.
Throw it on the ground.
Talk about a big surprise. I think he was expecting a Japanese restaurant behind those curtains. This is not the case.
No.
He was not handed a warm washcloth to wipe his hands with. He was handed a phaser to the dome.
Which is a bit, I understand that it's a little bit hard to keep cultural differences distinct when you grow up in New Orleans and you're not necessarily super familiar with all the different cultures of of Asia, but a Singha is a Thai beer, and right. unlikely to be in a Japanese restaurant.
It's true. But in the 24th century, I mean, there's probably been...
God, that was just the longest fucking walk of all time for the most mediocre punchline.
I had it in the back of my head, too. I just didn't go back for it. I'm glad you did. We pulled over the pod car. You got out.
Listen, there are not that many jokes on this show, but we categorized it as comedy. We got to go get it. We got to.
The podcast did not strap down what was in the bed of the truck.
Yeah, it's like when you see a couch cushion on yeah. the side of the highway.
The
you know
joke
that whoever's
flew out.
Losing a couch cushion on the side of the highway cannot exactly afford to replace their couch.
Yeah, you had to go back for that joke. You had to wait for the traffic to pass,
yeah.
run out into the road and go get it. That's what you did. The best part about that joke is going back and discussing the joke in a little segment we like to call Behind the Joke. Oh, Sisko is there to dispense Starfleet justice, but Ben, the tables have been turned.
Yeah. You know Eddington, he's always a couple of chess moves ahead, and Sing Ta did not make it to the Star Trek caves. He had a bit of a shuttle accident, you know, shuttle on the way to the conference, most dangerous place that you can be.
Yeah, should know better.
And apparently he's been marooned on some horrible SETI Alpha 5 type planet and has been doomed to a slow death that nobody seems to ever think to go try and rescue him from.
Ooh, that is dark. Yeah, I mean, Sisko, like the thing about Sisko in this episode is how single-minded he is,
uh-huh.
to the exclusion of this poor guy marooned on this planet, who was an agent for them, an agent for Sisko. Like,
yeah.
he's being punished.
Right. Yeah.
That's not right.
You can't leave a man in the field like that, Sisko.
No.
Eddington makes the case, like, the Maquis are not killers. We didn't murder Sing Ta, we just marooned him.
They're slow killers.
Right. And that's a bit rich given the the strategy that Eddington pursues later in the episode. But perhaps I'm getting ahead of myself.
When the Maquis punish someone, they go low and slow. As in low gravity
yeah.
and slow death.
They're the Franklin barbecue of killers.
Sisko and Eddington do that verbal joust where they argue about whose fault it is that all these refugees are there. And
yeah.
Sisko's position is that to promise these refugees that they're getting their homes back is deceptive. And Eddington's position is that the reason they don't have homes at all is it's Starfleet's fault.
Here's my question, Adam. Do either of these men think they are going to convince the other?
No.
No,
this is a pillow fight of arguments.
It really is. It is so pointless. Like, I could see doing this, like, televised, you know, so that the at-home audience can form their decision.
Uh-huh.
But having a private conversation like this just seems, like, pretty worthless. Eddington is not going to convince Sisko and vice versa. So that's, I don't know. It just seemed like it was like there to kill time, you know?
Or to remind us about who Eddington is for the new viewer or casual viewer.
Right. And basically he is Fishy French guy. He is, this is not a treaty. This is a war crime. You took these people home away from them and you never give it back.
Yeah, it's just not getting through to Sisko. And it's not getting through to Eddington.
No.
They're at lager jams.
Yeah.
That's what that word is, right?
Yeah, let's go fix the cable, Adam.
The scene ends with Eddington beaming away and then Sisko speed beaming after him up to the little D, where it appears that Kira does not get any maternity leave, which is very unfair, I think.
Well, she's not suckling the child.
I think there are physical things that happen to a new mother that require a little bit of R&R after. Wouldn't you agree?
We do not know how long after the last episode this takes place. And I would argue it might be months after because...
Hey, man. Kira might have had to get that big snip. You need some time to recuperate after that one.
No, she was super chilled out when she had the baby. She did not get the big snip.
All right.
But I'm...
You say so.
I'm just saying, like the other evidence that I will cite is that Odo appears a few times in this episode and is not like, hey, isn't it fucking amazing that I'm a changeling again? Like, it goes uncommented on. It is like it never happened. And that
it feels oddly bodily. Besides the inclusion of Eddington,
yeah.
This is a very self-contained story here.
Yeah. So I kind of think that Odo has like had a lot of time to get used to the fact that he's back to normal.
For a while, I was just stuck as that eagle for weeks.
You know, it doesn't come back all at once. It takes time and effort. I was in physical therapy, and let me tell you, it's not an instantaneous process.
The one thing you don't want in your quarters when you're an eagle is a leather couch. Believe me. I ruined a lot of good furniture that week.
My talons and my cloaca really made short work of that thing. I won't cast any more extras on that couch ever again. Put it that way.
Golden cot.
The cot.
Golden cot.
So.
We get some brand new tech here in this scene, Ben. On the bridge of the Little D, they have unveiled the hollow emitter as a way to talk to Captain 90s dad of the USS Malinche. This captain does not seem thrilled to be involved in this chase for Eddington. What happened is Eddington got the jump. He beamed away so fast that the Little D can't close the distance, so they're having to call on whatever other ship is in the sector to cut him off.
Right. And the Malinche is controlling the demilitarized zone, and so they're going to be able to get there ahead of the Little D. But yeah, they're rolling out this new technology that is super new to all these people who, I guess, wouldn't know that it used to be standard install on every starship before Captain Pike ordered it ripped out of the Enterprise.
Yeah, it's true. Doesn't anyone read their history books?
Yeah. You know, those who don't know their history are doomed to repeat it.
Are you predicting a moment in time where they rip out the hollow emitters from the Little D?
Oh, maybe, yeah.
Now one will communicate using good old-fashioned view screens.
It seems like the most solid technology on the Little D at this point, though.
What you need is a moil. Get someone there to bite the hollow emitters off of the Little D.
Oh, that's the moil!
Oh, yeah, but then sometimes you can transmit diseases to the ship, and that's not good.
Yeah, it's
what we're trying to
troubling.
Do in this episode is get the virus out of the ship, Adam.
That's right. Because once they close the distance, there's the Malinche sort of cuts off Eddington, and then the Little D cuts him off from the other side.
Yeah, and it's as a soon pincer as they, action that they perform.
As soon as they pull up short, it's virus time on the Little D.
Yeah, this fucking ship computer is full of sabot.
Hence the word. Sabotage.
The sabot have been repopulating.
Mm-hmm. Did you notice that Sisko's soup thermos is a little bit different in this episode?
Yeah.
It's like a black thermos instead of a silver thermos now.
Eddington licks some real shots on Little D.
Because he also has hollow technology. He's like, hey, I'm in a guerrilla war, but I want all the nicest gadgets on my ship.
I've always wanted to know what it would be like to shoot myself. And so it's a weird scene, right? He's on the ship that he's shooting and he's talking shit to Sisko.
Yeah.
And he is really riling up Ben Sisko.
Yeah. Sisko's pissed.
It's not over between us.
He is about to be very pissed because the Little D is so crippled in this interaction that it must be towed home.
Yeah.
Which is like the greatest insult for a Starfleet captain.
Yeah.
You don't want the tow job.
Especially Sisko, who had a hand in constructing this ship, you know? Like, that's very personal.
It is, isn't it?
Like, it didn't really seem to be commented on by any of the characters, but I kind of feel like that is intentional. Like, that's part of, like, they wrote it so that it would make him, like what would make him the maddest?
That's
short
a great
of,
point.
Like, kidnapping Jake or whatever.
Yeah, great point. back on DS9, we're given the realization that the little D has been so damaged that it'll take 2 weeks of work to get it functional again.
They got the boys down at the crime lab working in shifts.
Yeah, this is a extremely long refractory period for the little D.
Right. And the other bad news is that as the captain of the Malenke delivers to Sisko is that he's been taken off Eddington duty by Starfleet Command.
I get it.
Yeah.
It makes total sense. This is what makes the scene great, is that Sisko gets it too.
It's the classic cop movie trope of... like, you're taking this too personally. We're not gonna put you on the case. And like what always happens in those movies, Adam? The cop finds a way to get back on the case.
Yeah, the cop like gives his gun and his badge to the captain and goes rogue.
Mm-hmm. And that is where Sisko is headed, but not before he goes and has a super outrageous boxing scene where Dax is holding the heavy bag while Sisko enumerates all of his many failures, W/R/T Eddington.
He's just a man like me. And he beat me.
This is such a generous scene for an actor. I went to look to make sure that Avery Brooks didn't direct it. Like... this seems like out of nowhere. This is what Avery Brooks is best at, right? Like going to 11, like grabbing the scenery.
Dude, he goes to 12 and a half in this scene.
And just tearing it down around him.
Oh my God.
He's terrifying.
Yeah. And just like he's dripping with sweat. Like I was like sincerely worried for Terry Farrell that he was going to like punch through the bag and hurt her.
The intensity of this scene can't be overstated. He is really hitting a heavy bag. Terry Farrell is really holding it, and that is real sweat.
I think she does a great job of matching him too.
Yeah.
Like he's going fucking crazy, and she is flipping shit right back at him in a way that I thought was great.
Yeah.
It's good you're working it out in the bag, Benjamin.
Who? He's never been taken off of an assignment. Like, that's part of it. There's a lot of things going on in his head. It's the failure of having not been able to apprehend Eddington. It's the being rotated out of a mission that he felt was his responsibility. It's a failure on a number of levels.
You know what it kind of reminds me of is Picard's freak out in First Contact.
Yeah, like, the heavy bag of Sisko's little ships.
Like, Eddington's... having pulled his pants down so spectacularly is the signature failure of his career in the way that being Locutus is for Picard.
No!
Sisko knows that he fucked up, but he's not wrong, right? He says he got played. He said he made some mistakes, like he didn't see what was right in front of him. These are things that you and I have said are... foundational traits for Captain Sisko up until now. He is too trusting.
Right.
He is too blinded by the uniform. Like, it's the Cal Hudson problem all over again.
Right. I think on last episode you made the crack that this was going to be about Cal Hudson, and I think that this would have been maybe an even more interesting episode if they had taken it in that direction.
Yeah, it would have been cool.
Because the betrayal that Eddington did was professional.
Yeah.
But Cal Hudson's betrayal was professional and personal because they were friends.
Yeah. Yeah, and Sisko's reaction to that kind of betrayal feels like what he's doing here. Like, if this is how he's responding to an Eddington double cross, I honestly can't imagine what he would do. If this were Cal Hudson on the other side.
Impossible to imagine him going crazier than this.
Yeah.
And it is just like a relentless series of ball kicks because they come out of this and Sisko is still drenched in sweat when he finds out that Eddington has genocided a Cardassian colony.
I was very distracted by the sweat, I'll tell you. Like I was like, at what point is he going to change his uniform and shower? And it is several scenes later that happens.
I ain't even wiping my sweat. It's keeping me cool.
This is a interesting piece of tech that we are given knowledge of here. Eddington has used a bioweapon on a planet full of Cardassians, and he has created this weapon out of ingredients that he's stolen from transport ships.
Right. It's the neutron bomb of clearing out the Cardassians in a way that will not affect humans that want to go take over the planet in question.
These Bolian freighters that he raided for this stuff contain selenium, which everyone knows is the active ingredient of Head and Shoulder shampoo.
That's how you beat the aliens in Evolution, the classic David Duchovny film.
Haven't you noticed how shiny and flake-free our hair is?
I love that movie. I only brought it up because I want to use the drops.
Fun.
Yeah.
So the Malenke is the only, like a classic Star Trek thing is like, how many ships are in the fleet? Well, basically none. So,
Wolf 359 really wiped him out, Ben. Come on.
So the Malinche has is not going to be able to do this patrol, and the Little D is shredded. But they're going to take her out in a deeply compromised way, and see if they can catch Eddington.
They do the laundry list of things that are fucked up on the Little D. And I love that it's O'Brien that's like, yeah, so every single system is ruined and non-functional, including the inertial dampening system. You remember what happened on the USS Patio? There's like a 50-50 chance that that happens to us if we go out.
Yeah.
This is a terrible idea. Why are they doing this?
Boy, I don't know. It is rough. The only thing that is working is the hollow communicator. Or whatever.
I feel like there's a scene missing, Ben, and that scene is, I can't ask any of you to follow me into this.
Right.
But like, if you turn around now, no one will think differently of you. Like, we needed that scene, because there is so much danger here for a captain that's basically gone rogue that you really need that moment.
Right. He's basically been ordered not to mess with Eddington.
Yeah.
It feels like it could have been a two-parter, honestly. Like, this is a shit ton of episode.
It's a lot.
To be quite honest about it, I was in a pail.
A bucket.
A pail.
Mr. Bucket,
I have to revert back to my instinct. I don't use the bucket anymore.
Even internal communications are messed up on the Little D, so what they're going to have to do is have Cadet Nog be the person that is transmitting orders down to the engine room and back to the bridge. And so Ensign Nog comes in, and I didn't really understand like why he had a communicator that worked and other people didn't, but he has a little gadget that he holds up by his ear. And there are very fun, like World War II submarine film vibes once this gets going, which is like every order is like repeated in kind of a bucket brigade style. And every time the ship turns or switches something on or whatever, like, three different people have to do something to make it happen.
Yeah. I dug it. I liked the patter of it. It felt very military in a way that this story is very military.
Yeah. It was really good.
It's very Run Silent, Run Nog.
All right. You got the title again. Great.
At this point, Sisko's taking a shower, right?
I don't know. I just don't even... When am I going to get a title?
When you come up with a good title.
There were people on Reddit saying that it might be like 147U, 133Me on titles. There's no fucking way. You have easily three quarters of all titles.
I don't think so. It's the only thing I'm good at on this show. Just give me this, Ben.
That's not true. That's like saying, hey, listen, I'm just going to be the funny one. You be the regular one.
That's not how it is. That's not how it is. We're both the regular one. We get a scene here at there's sort of an interstitial scene between Dax and Sisko that serves to diminish the tension of what's happening. Sisko is paranoid that Dax thinks he's crazy for going out on this mission, which he is, by the way. And instead of holding him to account, Dax uses the moment to bank a favor for later.
Yeah. She's like, hey, next time Koloth shows up and I want to go murder someone in cold blood on some Klingon set trip and shit, I'm just going to remind you of this little conversation.
Yeah. Like, Dax, you can't call in a favor if you're dead. And those are the stakes, and yet they're not stated at whatsoever. Yeah. I think death is on the table here, and no one's acting like it.
Well, you never go up against a Sicilian when death is on the line, Adam.
There's a fun version of like one of my favorite parts of any Star Trek film is like the ship leaving dock. You know, the lights turn on, the ship flips around, the mm-hmm. music swells. It's great. It's one of the best parts of a Star Trek movie, but there's a fun circus mirror version of that where the ship, the little D here is super fucked up. They're being very careful to turn it around. It's kind of frisbeeing outside of Deep Space Nine.
Yeah.
It almost hits one of the arms of it.
Yeah.
It's wild.
Yeah. What is Denise Richards, the pilot of this ship?
That could be a title.
No. That's not structured like a title.
Yeah, it's not. It's not. It's forced, too. We just can't force it.
It's not forced. That was just a joke. It's just not. It's not the kind of joke that makes its way into the title of the show.
I thought the little D should have continued frisbeeing all the way to the Badlands.
Oh, there's another title.
That would have been fun.
Congratulations. You've had three titles so far this show.
Your jet lag is still very thick, Ben. I'm excited for you to get more sleep, after which you're going to be a little bit nicer to me.
What's the episode of Friendly Fire that we recorded when I was like extraordinarily punchy from it?
Oof. Yeah. You
was
really
that
were.
Alexander?
Yeah. You really took it out on us.
Man, I could not see straight that episode.
After we had finished recording, John was like, wow, that was something. He is very upsettable.
Fuck. I owe that guy an apology.
No, you don't. No, because you were taking it out on me. You weren't taking it out on John.
Was I?
Yes.
I don't even remember the show. I'm sorry.
Very much so. It's fine. It's fine.
Adam, I'm sorry. I'm sorry I did that.
So the little D makes it out to the Badlands. Yeah. And one detail I didn't notice about Eddington when he appears on the hollow emitter this time is how giant his leather lapels are.
Yeah.
He looks like he's emerging from a labia.
Yeah.
Like, because he's wearing, you know what this kind of leather is in a way that I don't. Like, it's super wrinkly, soft leather. So yeah. It looks very fleshy.
Well, he gets all his clothes at the same store as Admiral Satie.
Yeah. Yeah, I love this jacket, though. It looks very space piratey.
Yeah, he's got kind of a roguish cut to his jib, and this turns out to be a total jam up. Like he was just kind of buying time so that he could fuck up the Malinche, and when the little D comes upon the Malinche, which is the Hood class starship, it is in a really bad way. And so now they're sort of returning the favor, helping Captain 90's dad.
Captain 90's dad reports that their tennis courts are in ruins, a foosball table was knocked over, and the frozen beverage machines are inoperative. In a word, Ben, they are buzz-killed.
Really harshed their mellow.
Yeah. 90's dad has now turned into Captain Disappointed 90's dad.
Yeah. So Eddington is continuing his rampage. He's going to go threaten another Cardassian population with genocide.
Selenium, how much do we need?
And they have to kind of like do the math on which population that's going to be.
500 gallons could do it, should do it.
There are four candidate planets. Two of them have upgraded security measures so they can reject those out of hand. And then the other two are kind of like, one is like got like great mining operation and like semi-upgraded security. And the other one is like basically an easy target.
Yeah, and it's like if you're playing Civ and you're trying to decide if you're going to attack a civilization from like the classical period or from the Renaissance or something, you're going to choose the weaker of the two.
Right.
That's what they're thinking.
Right.
You don't want to attack a city that's got cannons or or like firearms. You want to attack the one that still has arrows.
Right. You want to send your musket men up against their horse archers.
Exactly.
But Sisko realizes that Eddington is a zig when we think he's going to zag type of guy.
Mm.
And, you know, like they made the case that like maybe Captain 90's dad is going to be better at hunting Eddington because Eddington knows Sisko too well and can predict his actions. But you know, that blade cuts both ways. Sisko kind of knows the psychology of Eddington and can predict that Eddington is going to go for the harder target.
Right. Everything has been reduced to them. It is one-on-one at this point.
Mono, mono.
Everyone else is just along for the ride. I wonder what Eddington's crew is thinking over there. Like, that's a perspective you don't get.
Yeah. Is Eddington the head of all Makewees?
It kind of seems that way.
I think that this episode kind of makes the case that he is.
I wish they didn't kill off Tom Riker. Like, to sprinkle Tom Riker around every once in a while, boy, oh boy.
Boy, if we had gotten an episode with Cal Hudson, Eddington, and Tom, how fucking great would that have been?
Tom Riker appears on the bridge of the Little D, looks over at Kira, and she's like, you know, I got the big snip. Riker's like, I'm up to that challenge.
Jesus. Fuck.
You know, everyone's doing 6-month sentences for being in the Makewees. Like, he could have gotten out of prison by now, right?
Yeah, I suppose so.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, Eddington's looking down the barrel of one of those if he gets caught. 6 months. Pretty tough.
Wow. That ruler on the knuckles is really going to smart.
What are you doing now?
Exactly. They head to this planet that Sisko correctly predicts Eddington will be attacking. And there's some pretty fun space combat between the Makewees Raiders and the Little D. They get the first one, and then the second one heads back to the planet, and they're like, what the fuck is this thing doing? And what it's doing is attacking one of the drain cleaner ships that the Cardassians are using to evacuate their despoiled planet.
Mm.
And so now they have a sort of Dark Knight Joker style dilemma where it's go after Eddington and kill him or save the Cardassian drain cleaners.
Yeah. What's he going to do?
He's going to save the Cardassians.
Yeah, there was never any doubt, right?
Right. You don't let the innocents go.
But boy, Eddington really like rubs his face in it. Eddington knows his enemy also.
Yeah.
And this is good strategy by him.
Yeah. I think that they could have just not had the hollow emitter. Like, I think that these scenes would have been as effective if they had just had everything be on FaceTime the way it always is in Star Trek.
It feels like the only reason to do this if it's going to be the thing that they do henceforth.
Right.
Like, if this is just a thing they do for the next few episodes and then stop, I am on your side on that. It's unnecessary.
Yeah, I can't really remember if this is a thing after this or not.
It seems like a budget thing. Like, on the surface, you wouldn't think that an effect would cost less, but you're not building a bridge for Eddington to communicate out of on his side, so I think in the long run, you're saving money by continuing this effect.
Yeah, but they've got to have a Makewees Raider background, right?
Yeah,
you don't have to do much. I mean, like, if TNG taught us anything, you can put a Ferengi in front of a white screen and say that that's the bridge of their ship.
Yeah, it's strange. Don't know what to make of it. Just like Sisko and Dax don't know what to make of this file that they were able to retrieve. There was some communication among the Makewees Raiders, and they were able to steal some of it and study it, and that's Odo's job.
Yeah, and it is like a Breen nursery rhyme.
Yeah, that's all it is, and that's what's frustrating Odo. He's like, I know you told me not to open the attachment, but I opened the attachment, and nothing was there.
Far be it from me to ignore the admonishments of the IT department.
But curiosity got the best of me, and I really wanted to see what it was like to have pinball on my computer.
The subject line was forward, 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 Cisco's emails.
Yeah, there's a lot of, are you familiar with Les Miserables?
I'm not, but I know you are.
I'm not. I've never seen it or read it.
Well, I know your pronunciation is dead wrong, Ben. It's supposed to be called Les Miserables. Try it. Les Miserables.
Les Miserables.
Les Miserables.
Feliz Navidad.
I hung a piñata from the ceiling of the playhall.
This entire episode pivots into Les Mis.
Yeah. And the conversation between Dax and Cisco is about how Eddington sees that as a metaphor. And the way he sees it as a metaphor is that Eddington is the good guy and Cisco is the like corrupt cop that is busting his chops for stealing a loaf of bread, bad guy. So Cisco decides that the heel turn is the way to win the day. And so he's going to lean into his role as a villain by basically doing the same thing to a Maquis planet that Eddington has done to a couple of Cardassian planets.
You either die a hero or you live long enough to see yourself become the villain.
I thought for sure after this pivot, the Malinche would be back on the scene and like the little D would be totally rogue, right? Like, can he get Eddington before the Malinche gets him? Because this is heel on top of heel, right? Like, they're doing a mission that is unsanctioned, and then they're about to raise the stakes of that mission by pivoting into bioweapon.
Right. Which a lot of text-based news websites tried to do in sort of the late 2000s, and it wound up really fucking their budgets up.
Cisco's like, Worf, attach bags of trilithium to some torpedoes. And Worf's like,
yeah,
that's an idiotic plan. Maquis raiders are too fast for that. And he's like, no, we're going to shoot at planets.
Trilithium torpedoes are what they were using in Star Trek Generations, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Trilithium.
Yeah.
Time travel.
This is an episode that really makes you think it is going to be about Cisco bluffing, because so many times we've seen, just like across all television, we've seen a character like come up with the clincher that is going to defeat the bad guy.
Yeah.
And kind of not let anybody else in on it so that they can get all of the dramatic reveal at the end when they say, well, I was bluffing and I got him. Cisco is not bluffing. He goes and fucking kills a planet.
Kills a planet for humans.
Yeah.
And that's what's so interesting about these weapons, right? Like, they are equal and opposite reactions. Eddington's shampoo bomb makes a planet uninhabitable for Cardassians, and Cisco's trilithium bomb makes it uninhabitable for humans. But if you shot a planet at the same time, would the torpedoes cross in midair?
What do you got then? Shampoo Holocaust.
There's your title, Ben.
I got it.
There it is. You did it.
I got it. Late in the game. A buzzer beater.
Nice work.
I feel really good. I don't feel like I earned it, but I'm happy that I got it.
Eddington has this moment.
Does that make
with
me
Cisco.
A bad person, Adam?
No. No, not at all. You're a lot like the Joker in the movie Joker.
That I'm like a loser incel? Thanks.
I don't think you're like that.
Have you seen that movie?
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to see it.
Seems bad, right?
You kind of take Eddington's side here, right? You have to. Who is more sane at this exact moment? And hinged versus unhinged? It's actually Eddington.
Yeah. I mean, I don't agree with the direction Eddington took his life in. And I don't like the way he left Starfleet to go pursue that. But what Cisco did here was a real crazy Hail Mary. And it's kind of, it's like one of those movies where the cop goes rogue and all of the crimes they committed along the way toward bagging the criminal are looked past because they won in the end.
Ben, the two-part episode that this episode should be should have the courtroom, should have the court-martial in that second episode.
Yeah.
The deployment of biological weapons by Sisko is not legal in the Federation, and he should be in, like, he should not have his command after this.
It should start with the court-martial in the first episode and be like a Rashomon retelling of the of the events.
Yeah.
Because basically at the end of the episode, what they're saying is we solve the Makewees.
By capturing Eddington?
Yeah.
I think the Makewees is like Hydra. I think you cut off Eddington's head and then two more heads pop up.
Boy, I like they have their showdown where Eddington is standing in the inside the hula hoop that describes where the holo communicator can be.
What are you really up to, Javert?
They should have put a grid on the floor, right?
And Eddington relents and says, like, okay, you can have me, just don't kill any more Makewees planets.
All right, Javert. I'll give you what you want.
You're saying my sentence is only 6 months, right? Like you promise.
Right.
That's what it's going to be.
I got your word on that?
And then when it's over, you'll have me back on the station.
Yeah, I'll get right? to put the gold uniform back on and it'll be one of those,
that's what
one
you
of those
do.
Nice new ones, not the not the super dumpy old one.
This series just pivots into a series of like Sisko just never learning his lesson.
But there's the button, which is there, like they get Eddington off of the little D and Dex and Sisko like walk down the thing, and the case is made that like the Makewees thing is over.
The balance in the region will be restored, though the situation remains far from stable.
Like there's still a little bit of like political unrest, but essentially in one fell swoop, the problem of the Makewees has been solved.
Contextually, that just doesn't make sense. Like, I know they're telling us this, but every time we've had an interaction with the Makewees, like they are a rogues gallery. They have many heads and many captains, and that's part of what makes fighting them so difficult.
Yeah.
Like this doesn't make any logical sense based on what we've been told about the Makewees. And I hope it's not the truth for that reason.
Yeah.
It just seems too easy if so.
Well, and it's like, it's easy also because it's like, okay, like we poisoned one planet, so we'll move all the people from that planet to the other one that got abandoned by the Cardassians and vice versa. Like, it is a very neat bow that they tie a very messy situation with the Makewees up in.
If ending the Makewees was about killing one person, the Federation would deploy an armada to go and get Eddington and kill him or capture him. And the idea that that's not part of their strategy for defeating the Makewees is insane.
I also thought it was a little crazy that like no Cardassians appear in the episode. No,
right.
Like the only Cardassian ship we see is a drain cleaner that's like in big trouble.
Yeah.
Like, oof. Wouldn't... It's like the Cardassians are like have the same problem as the Federation, where somebody is going and wiping out planets along their frontier, and they're like, shit, we just don't have any ships to send. Whoops.
What else is the Federation doing right now?
Morn, morn,
morn,
dear sweet morn,
morn,
morn.
Evening, everybody.
Morn,
stop. Hammer time.
A lot of questions, a lot of holes. Did you like the episode, Ben?
Yes.
Strong yes.
It's an episode with a lot of questions and a lot of holes, but it's also just a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's true.
The Avery Brooks performance by itself is enough to make me like this episode. But also, like, I can kind of relate to the writers in, like, maybe I misunderstood something about the end of this episode, but I kind of feel like they were like, What if we wrote an episode that by the end of it, we were just not dealing with the Makewees anymore and we could like focus on more interesting shit in the storyline?
God, it feels like the Shakaar problem all over again, right? Like either through boredom or disinterest, we're just going to tie this one up.
Yeah.
Is that it?
Let's get it off the table because we got bigger fish to fry.
I guess.
Did you like the episode, Adam?
I liked all of the same things that you liked. I don't think it... Yeah, I mean, it was fun to kind of sport fuck the episode. But when you do the math of it, it was fun to go to war again. It was fun to hop on the little D and shoot some torpedoes. That's the kid sci-fi that I love. I am very curious about what happens to Sisko's character after this.
Yeah.
By sacrificing the high road the way he did, it should change him forever. He should be in big trouble. But it's hard to believe that there's going to be any consequences here. And further, like, do you see him changing at all? Is he always like... His big deal about in that punching bag scene was like was how he couldn't see what was right in front of him.
Yeah.
Like he couldn't he let it happen and he feels responsible, but
he took him to a baseball game. He recommended him for a promotion and he was installing computer viruses on my ship and my station the entire time.
If you trace Captain Sisko's arc from the many times he's been duped up until now, do you think that he's a changed man? I think he could be duped again, but I don't think he's predictable in the way that he once was.
Yeah.
You know, because using a bioweapon, I think that changes a person.
Yeah. Well, and I think that it's a level up in a chaotic good kind of way. Like he was such lawful good before, and now he's like sort of changed alignments.
Right.
And I think that makes him a little bit more interesting as a character. And also,
well, he's no longer lawful, right?
He's no longer lawful, and he has a whole new like bag of tricks to draw on. Like the point about Eddington is that Eddington beat him. Like Eddington was better than him, and that drives him crazy.
I think it's crucial that Sisko didn't beat Eddington in the end. Eddington gave up.
Yeah.
Which cannot be satisfying if you're Ben Sisko. At least it would not satisfy the man beating up the heavy bag earlier.
Right. You know what I sometimes find satisfying, Adam?
Beating up the Priority One message bag?
Yeah.
Beat it up.
That bag is heavy, Adam.
Yeah.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Ben, our first Priority One message is for Ben and Adam, and it is from a guy who's a little bit embarrassed to have listened to 279 episodes of a Star Trek podcast.
Well, there's more than that now.
Yeah, evidently this person quit after 279. The message goes like this. I don't usually look at pods on the internet, but when I came across yours, I found them alluring in ways I didn't expect, but kind of enjoyed. Hundreds of episodes and a voyage of self-discovery later, I figured I should throw you some scarves. May you take these scarves and do all the things I'm curious about, but I'm too bashful myself to try.
Wow. What should we do with the scarves?
I think he's encouraging, little bit of breath play.
Jeez.
Which we don't condone at all.
Yeah.
Very dangerous to, for
super
instance,
dangerous.
Tie a scarf around your neck and then tie that scarf to a doorknob.
Yeah. Exciting, but dangerous.
And then just try jacking it until you pass out.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that should be a thing that anyone does. It's too dangerous.
You don't want to carradine yourself.
No. No carradines around here.
Well... I guess we'll just have to, like, order weird cocktails or something.
That sounds to me like it would be jacking off in excess. What's your message say, Ben?
Adam, our next Priority One message is from Nikolai Dalchimsky, and it's for Barbara. It goes like this. The woods are lovely, dark, and deep, but I have promises to keep and miles to go before I sleep, and miles to go before I sleep. Remember, miles to go before I sleep.
What does it mean?
I don't know. It's not like the warm-honeyed bosom style, like, Soviet spy activation code of random words and references.
Yeah.
But it's a Russian name, Nikolai Dalchimsky. I'm immediately suspicious of the Russian name.
I'm gonna put this message into the gurgle. See what comes out. Oh, yeah. This is Stopping by Woods on a Snowy Evening by Robert Frost.
Hmm.
The woods are lovely, dark, and deep, but I have promises to keep, and miles to go before I sleep, and miles to go before I sleep. Yeah. Robert Frost.
Well, Barbara just stuck a penknife into the neck of an ambassador somewhere. But, you know, we're powerless to stop things like that because there's no way to know that we're just rebroadcasting murder codes. But
I like
if you'd like
it.
To send a murder code, you can head to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. It's $100 for a personal murder or $200 for a promotional murder.
Do you think he's talking about Miles O'Brien? Could it be
I
a
thought
little
about that,
play?
But he doesn't capitalize it all the time. He only capitalizes it when it's the beginning of the sentence.
Yeah. Send more poetry. That's nice.
Yeah, poetry's nice. I would say, I'm just going out on a limb here, Adam, but poetry slaps.
Yeah, maybe we could turn this into a poetry one message.
Cool.
No? Don't fucking cool me. That's the most withering thing you could say. Did you do the thing about the thing and the support and whatever?
Yeah, I did.
Okay.
Gotta get that cold press lock. Get that cold press lock. Am I right?
This episode is brought to you by the spring cleaning champions, Manscaped. This season, make sure to groom your carpets and your drapes with the leaders in below-the-waist grooming. Clear out your winter bush with Manscaped's Lawnmower 5.0 and watch your confidence bloom like the springtime flowers. Hey, maybe you're getting away on weekends, getting into a swimsuit, into a sexy situation where you're not wearing pants at all. You want to look your best from head to toe. Get yourself some Manscaped products. You know, it doesn't just have to be your junk. You know, they've got the Beard Hedger Pro Kit and a Handyman Electric Face Shaver. They make great stuff, and I think you'll really enjoy it. And you'll get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants. Put your best foot forward and present your new business project or political thing as well as you possibly can on the internet. How do you do that? Not through some cookie cutter form on a social media website or trying and failing to code a pretty website yourself. No, you go to Squarespace, start using their completely new guided design system, Squarespace Blueprint, which helps you choose from professionally curated layouts and styling options that help you build a unique online presence from the ground up that is tailored to your brand or business. Squarespace has been a super loyal sponsor of The Greatest Generation. We hope you will give them a try. Go to squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/scarves to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
It's Webby season. Hi, I'm Sequoia Holmes, host of the Black People Love Paramore podcast, and we are nominated for a Webby for the episode where I interviewed Hayley Williams. In case you're unfamiliar, Black People Love Paramore is a podcast delving into the common and uncommon interests of Black people in order to help us feel more seen. We would love your vote to help us win this Webby. Please take a second and go over to the Black People Love Paramore podcast social media accounts, and you can find them at BPLP Pod across all social media platforms. Hit the link in bio and vote for Black People Love Paramore.
Hi, I'm Travis McElroy.
And I'm Teresa McElroy.
And we're the host of Schmanners.
We don't believe that etiquette should be used to judge other people.
No, on Schmanners, we see etiquette as a way to navigate social situations with confidence.
So if that sounds like something you're into,
join us every Friday on Maximum Fun, wherever you get your podcasts.
Gotta get that gold press lock.
Hey, Adam.
What's that, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Drunk Shimoda!
I'm going to give my Shimoda to Odo for throwing Monster Shade. At Cisco, there's a meeting of the minds, a McLaughlin group.
Issue one.
If you will. Welcome back, McLaughlin group, by the way. Happening in Cisco's office next to Ops. And Odo's like, when was the last time you talked to Starfleet Command? Cisco's like, I don't know. Odo's like, well, next time you do, you might want to remind them that they posted Eddington here because they didn't trust me. And he throws his arms up like, yeah. The fuck? And then he leaves. That was amazing. I love that part.
That was dope.
Odo taking it personally.
Yeah.
And rightfully so. They fucked up.
Yeah, indeed.
They trusted the wrong man. Who's your Shimoda, Ben?
My Shimoda is Dax for similar reasons. That scene at the end of the episode where she's like, so like, is Starfleet cool with this? This whole thing where you like nuked a planet to catch one man? Which she really rode for earlier is basically... Yeah. Why I thought that was funny.
Hey, you know how earlier you were talking about that double agent that was marooned on that planet and was slowly dying?
Mm-hmm.
You think we should, like, pick him up or something?
Yeah, and,
Cisco's like, I'm late for a workout.
Listen,
hold the bag, Dax.
The little D needs a lot of work in the shop before we do any frivolous bullshit like that.
Yeah. Well, whew, really feel bad for that guy. Is anyone going to feel bad for us when you tell us what episode we're watching next, Ben?
I don't know, probably.
Yeah. What's it going to be?
Season 5, Episode 14, In Purgatory's Shadow, Part 1. While Worf and Garrick are imprisoned in the Gamma Quadrant, Sisko learns of a Dominion invasion.
What?
It's happening.
Whoa.
The Doms are coming.
Oh, geez.
And the subs ain't ready.
Subs better get ready. Subs better take a very thorough shower.
Yeah. Clean everything. Lubricate well.
All right. Well, one form of lubrication we have around this show is the Coco Nono Square on our Game of Buttholes. Will of the Prophets, that square being, of course, five squares ahead of the square we're on now, which is square 41. You feeling lucky, Ben?
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
I've got the die in my hand.
Yeah, let me give those a little puff.
Oh, Ben, I rolled a 2.
Chula! Did I win?
Hardly.
Land us safely on square 43, a regular old episode.
Yay!
And that will be that. You know what? There's going to be a lot of war episodes to watch and drink through, so maybe starting sober is the way to do it.
Yeah, I think so.
Maybe. I don't know. Never seen this episode before. Could be wrong. Dead wrong. Well, one thing that always feels so right, Ben, is showing gratitude to the many people who make the show possible, starting, of course, with those that go to MaximumFun.org/donate. They keep the show going, this very expensive show going, this very expensive tour going. They keep us going. This friendship that clearly costs money. Going.
Yeah.
You have our gratitude.
You do.
Some great free ways to support the show include going to your podcast purveyor of choice, giving the maximum number of stars or dots or whatever thing. There's probably a custom rating system over there on a podcatcher that you could fill out. Give us all five. I think my recommendation.
Yeah, I think that the deal is like if you can rate it as a show, rate it as a show. But if you can only rate it as an episode, just rate the episodes. Like if you're in Overcast, there's a little star there, and if you hit that star, it will recommend the show to other people, and the show will rise in their little show recommendation algorithm on the Add a New Podcast page.
It's been a long time since we've like put a concerted effort in like really getting more reviews of the show. And I was listening to a show the other day that had the idea of doing a Q&A episode based on 5-star review comments.
Oh.
Which I thought was interesting.
That is clever.
That might get people to participate. So
yeah.
If you like the show,
we'll do like an upcoming Marin.
Yeah. We'll Marin open some 5-star questions. If you have some questions for Ben or myself, leave a 5-star review and a question in that comment, and we will read it and answer it on a future episode's Marin.
I like it. I mean, I don't love it because I'm going to have to look through comments and potentially see some 1-star ones that make me feel really bad. But
I haven't looked at comments in maybe a year. I've been really good about that.
Wow.
You just got to sort by recent and hope we're lucky. Some of those early comments are pretty rough.
Yeah. All right. Well, now that we've opened ourselves up to that, should we get out of here?
Yeah, not before thanking Adam Ragusea.
Check out his cooking YouTube. I'm gonna do a recipe on Adam Ragusea's cooking YouTube.
What?
Yeah.
Which one?
I'm gonna make a chicken stew that I really like, and it's gonna be on the Adam Ragusea cooking channel. It might be up already by the time you hear this.
What? As in, like, you're a guest on his cooking show?
Yeah, I'm gonna film it. He's gonna do the voiceover.
Wow.
Yeah.
Awesome.
You should do one too. I'm sure this is open to both of us.
Nah, I don't think so. I think he likes you more.
That's not
true. I'm gonna go to that YouTube page. I'm gonna see if your episode is up.
Everybody likes you more than me.
Videos. Doesn't look like your ep is up yet.
I'm saying by the time this comes out, Adam.
Ew.
I haven't shot it yet, fool.
Wrong hole, fool. Yeah. All right. Well, I'll be looking forward to that, Ben. I'm going to bring my appetite. Can eat that chicken stew. It's going to get me through this cold winter up in Seattle. Got to thank Bill Tilly. Bill Tilly 1973 on Twitter. He is the creator of the custom comedy cards that you see on every possible social media site. And with that, we will be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine, and an episode of The Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine that turns this cold war into a hot war. Hot. Too hot. Hot.
Too hot to handle, too cold to hold. We're Deep Space Nine and we're in control.
This war's gonna be so hot, you're gonna need some pot holders.
People are just going to love that tight 7 minutes about shitting that we opened the show.
I, uh, I wiped myself after our Marin Open, and now I'm ready to do a show.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.